How's everyone doing tonight? You doing good?
Good.
All right. Only a few people are excited. Everyone else is, you know, everything about dating. So, I'm actually very excited about tonight because not only because we get to talk about relationships and the different implications of that for us personally as well as for us as a church, but also because like Irene mentioned, this is actually one of the unique opportunities that we gather together. The first time, at least since I've been the pastor of our church, where we, all the single adults, have gotten together and where we gather together for worship. We gather together to just hear God's word. And I really want to take advantage of this time. And I really feel that what a great opportunity to talk about things that are on God's heart, but also that are relevant for us here specifically. And so, I'm glad that you're all here, and I hope that this can be a beneficial time for us. Not only that, but what I'm praying for is, you know, like in the book of Acts, when it said when God's people came and they met together and they gathered and they prayed together and they worshiped together, then the place was shaken, right? And that's what I really want to see in among us here, that, that we would see that kind of shift in the spiritual realm, that kind of shift in our church, that kind of shift even in society, and that starts from us here. And that might sound like a very high, like a very lofty ambition for one night, but I believe that God is sovereign. Amen? And He's powerful, and He can do it. And so let's have high expectations for tonight. And so can you just turn to the person next to you and say, expect great things tonight, all right? Just look at them eyeball to eyeball. I know, like, sometimes you're like, you know, all right? As intense of a look as possible, okay? All right. I'm going to show a clip of a movie. And this might be a movie that you watched when you were much younger. But I'm sure it's a movie that will... I have to admit this, okay? It's when I was researching this stuff, I watched this part of this movie like multiple times because I thought it was pretty catchy and pretty exciting, and it got my blood pumped and it got me moving. I didn't get in tears or anything, but I did think that this was pretty catchy, and I could understand why teenagers really like this kind of stuff. So as you watch this, I want you to think about some things, okay? I want you to think, how does this movie portray what a dating relationship is like, okay, and how romance starts. I want you to think about not just this, but other TV shows, other movies that you've seen, and how they portray dating relationships. All right, so let's watch this. Are we ready? So let's watch this. I forgot to do announcements. So let me just quickly do some announcements. I'm so eager to get into this. But some announcements for today. The first announcement is for tomorrow Sunday celebration. We're going to be going through our series called Paradigms or Eyewitness Paradigms. We're studying the book of John. So if you are somebody who's visiting here and you're a friend invited you to come out tonight, or if you're sitting here and you're thinking and a name pops in your head, wow, this person, I think I've been praying for this person for the last, I don't know, maybe 30 days or so. I've been, you know, really praying for God to work in them, or I just need it myself. And so I really want to experience God at our Sunday celebration. So this is going to be for tomorrow. If you live in the Karawachi area, you don't have any transportation, then we do provide rides. So that's the second announcement, is there are rides provided in between, right by the Matahari building there at 9:45 for our 10 a.m. service. All right. And our last announcement, what is our last announcement? Is life for life groups. And so for life groups, if you're not a part of a life group, we want you to be connected in our church more than just this gathering, more than just on Sundays, but really living life together. And one thing I'm very, very convinced about is that life as a single adult, especially in a big city like this, can be very lonely. And I know that many of us, we won't want to admit that, but it's very true. And we need community. I always tell people we need to know other people, and we need to be known by other people. And we love God more when we're involved in community. we're able to love other people and practice our Christianity in the context of community. And so life group is so important to our church. We have a life group in Katawachi. We also have a life group, we have two life groups in Katawachi, and we have one life group here that meets in Jakarta, actually in this exact building. And so next time you come, you'll know exactly where to meet, except not in this room, but somebody's house upstairs. So we want you to get connected with life groups. And just lastly, I announced this past Sunday, but we are having an adult mission project, and we're having actually planning three adult mission projects. But don't wait until the second or third one, all right? What I'm really praying for is that God will raise up people who will take a bold step of faith with their jobs, with other things going on in their lives, to take a week off of work and a week off of family responsibilities. And it will be from March 28th through April 2nd, that week, where we will be serving with a church in Yogyakarta, and where we will be helping rebuild a village there with the strategy of trying to share and show the love of Jesus Christ to that Muslim village. And so this will be our first opportunity. I'm very excited about this. And even at Relationship Seminar, you're thinking, oh, how can God speak to me? Maybe God will speak to you about going on a mission project. All right? Maybe you'll feel so convicted. Maybe you'll meet that special someone on that mission project. All right? Actually, missions romance never works, okay? I'll just tell you a funny... What I always tell people is this, okay? Is just to dash all your hopes, just to make it a little funny. Is even the ugliest person, like after like being with them for like 2-3 weeks, intense ministry, and you see them all the time, you're like, wow, that guy is actually pretty good looking. That guy might be a beast, right? Like, wow, that I'm open now. Yeah, that guy, his breath really is good in the morning, right? No, it's not. It's not, okay? It's the missions romance. And so, anyways, just if that didn't make any sense to you or that, like, put a bad taste in your mouth, then please forget it, okay? And we'll move on. And like I said, we're going to start with, I'm going to show this movie clip. And I just want you to sit back, enjoy it, and then think about this question, okay? How does this movie portray dating relationships? And how does this, you know, other movies that you've watched, even most recently, how do they portray dating relationships and relationships between men and women? Okay, so let's watch this, and then we'll discuss this together. Wow, that's a great place to end. They're looking right into each other's eyes. Okay, I know that this is a very innocent portrayal of romance and love, but can you just, the question should be up there, but the question is, how does this clip, this movie, and other movies or TV shows, how do they portray dating relationships? So can you turn to somebody next to you, and hopefully it's somebody that you don't know already, and if it is somebody that you know, you can move around and talk to somebody else that you don't know. Let's try to get to know each other even tonight with all these, you know, three different life groups here. So talk about this question, and then after a couple minutes, I'm going to ask for some of your feedback, okay? So, all right, go ahead. All right, let's, if everyone can turn back around and look up here. What were some of your conclusions from this? Please, I want you to give your input and to... You know, say it out loud. So what are some of your thoughts from this, besides it's catchy and you like it? You can admit if you like it, okay? I like it. I admit it, okay? So, but what are some things about this that, and how it portrays what dating relationships are like? Love at first sight. It's love at first sight. People, somebody that you never knew existed in that high school, and all of a sudden they pop out of nowhere at a New Year's Eve party, and... That guy might be like an axe murderer or something, but on that stage, there's that magic, and they fall in love, but they have no idea about each other. Okay, good. What else? Okay. It's either what they look like on the outside, or it's very, very feeling driven, very, very shallow in that sense. And so, and I don't know how they know that it's something new and something whatever it might be. And I guess they make enough movies so that they date all throughout high school, but it is very shallow, right? And the reason why they like each other so much is they can sing, right? And then they harmonize well together, and they can go karaoke together all the time, and that's awesome. So, okay, good. Anything else? Any other comments or things that you discussed? Or from any other movies or TV shows? Who here watches like Asian dramas? Okay, you don't have to raise your hand, okay? Asian dramas. I have a, you know, one thing that drives me crazy, I don't really like Asian dramas, but I did watch one. My in-laws wanted me to get into specific, you know, Korean dramas, and they wanted me to learn Korean, and so they said, you have to watch this television series. And so I watched it. It's called, the translation in English is First Love. It's an old one, and they had English subtitles, and so I could follow what's going on. And it's long, like 50 episodes, I don't know, 60 episodes. It's tremendously long, like an epic story. But the same thing happens in every single episode, all right? There are four people, two brothers and two women, separate women. They all like each other, but not the same people like each other, right? And so after watching like 10, 15 of these and enduring those episodes, I just started wishing I could just get all of them in a room, because it's so unrealistic, right? I mean, they all like each other at different points, and then what happens? There's tragedy. Somebody realizes something, and then they end up crying, or they end up telling somebody else, or they end up doing something crazy. And then, you know what I realized is, wow, I see this happen all the time in people. And do they learn it from these dramas? And it's a little bit like life imitates art, right? And all of a sudden now we feel these emotions when things don't go the way that they ought to go. And suddenly when we feel like our love lives are a mess, or relationships don't work out, or we ought to be in a relationship but we're not, then something's wrong with us. All these things begin to feed who we are. And that's where we are often tragically misinformed. Not only in our relationships, our dating relationships, but as well as in our status of singlehood and where many of us here are in our life stage right now. And there are some statistics that came out in February 2009 from an article in the Jakarta Post. And in this article, what it says is that between 1998 and 2008, there was a 1,000% increase in divorces in Indonesia. So that is from 20,000 per year in 1998 to 200,000 per year in Indonesia at the end of 2008. And in this article, it tries to explain and pinpoint what some of those factors are. Obviously, from a secular perspective, so things like political differences, economic differences, an unfaithful spouse, ethnic differences, religious differences. So they said specifically 90% of mixed faith marriages. So if two people from two different registered religious backgrounds get married, oftentimes it will end in divorce. About 90% of the time it will end in divorce. And these statistics are very alarming. And this is not just in the West. It is not just here in Indonesia. This is a human problem that we have. And the trend of our humanity is relationships, we need a lot of help. And this is why for us, what we have an opportunity to do tonight and what we have an opportunity to do in our church is be countercultural and actually create a biblical culture in our community of expectations of what it means to follow Jesus Christ and what it means not just by yourself and following Jesus, but in this stage where you are thinking, praying for, planning for being married, and worried about finding a significant other, how we need to approach that, we have a special opportunity. I guarantee, you know, this morning, this afternoon, I had the chance, actually, I was here with my family because there's a couple in our church who is getting ready to get married in a couple weeks, and so we had this housewarming thing and all this stuff, and you know, there's many people in our church who are engaged or dating, and so what I say is this for all of us here. I want us to imagine here, okay? On your wedding day, your wedding day is like every other wedding day, in the sense that the husband and wife, when they're standing up in front of the pastor, before their family and their friends, what do they say up when they come up here, when they give their vows? I know, when I gave my vows, I said, I botched them, number one. I had them written. My wife pretty much schooled me, and she had it memorized, and it was beautiful and eloquent, and I had mine printed out, and I read it. But I remember what I said, you know, something to the effect of, I'm going to live my whole life with you and you alone. I'm going to love you. I'm going to serve you no matter what, through sickness or health or poverty or riches. Whatever happens, I'm still going to stick with you, right? I mean, that wasn't original, okay? That's like probably every other marriage vow that has ever been stated. You never hear a marriage vow that goes something like this. After this day, I'm going to sleep with other women. After this day, if I don't like you, then I'll just go somewhere else. And after a while, we're going to get sick of each other. And I predict that after this glorious wedding day, after 1 year, we're going to hate each other's guts. And I'm going to want to kill you. You know, they don't say that kind of stuff. I'm going to take all your money. They never say that. I'm going to take the kids. They're never going to say that, right? It's because when they're up there, they sincerely believe what? That they will be with each other forever. That is their intention. That is their desire, their heart's desire when they're standing before the congregation and the pastor and their friends and family is, I'm going to be with you forever. But if these statistics don't lie, right? It's in a lot of places in the world, in the United States, it's the divorce rate is 60%. Where it's even increasing. And even for Christians, that number is the same, if not higher. Which means that most people, when they make those vows, they do not live up to the commitment that they make. We here have an opportunity, and me as a pastor, what I am passionate for is not only that you follow Christ, not only that you follow Christ as a single adult, but you follow Christ in your marriage and in your family life, and that you are the ones who live counterculturally in the world around you. And you make those vows, you fight it through, you stick it through, you're committed to each other. And that's what I want to see in our church. It's people get married, people getting married, and people living out God's purposes for them as a married family. I thought of three requirements for people to be in a Christ-glorifying dating relationship. And what I'll do is this, is I'm going to state these three requirements. I'm going to share a little bit biblically why I think that those are requirements. And then I'm going to pose two questions. And the questions will kind of bring it back into real life. And hopefully that will also mean so that these are questions that you will probably already be thinking about, all right? If you have questions that come up that are not answered, then please feel free. At the end, what we will do is we will give a time for question and answers. And so you can SMS your questions. There's a number here, right here. So just SMS your question. That way, you don't have to lie and say, well, I have a friend who likes this one person. You can say, you know, just state the question very boldly, all right? And this is my question, blah, blah, blah. And then no one knows who it's from. We can't read your handwriting, okay? Eric will take the questions. He'll give them to me. and I'll try to answer them as best as I can. So please feel free, and during the course of this iHeart seminar, if you have any questions, please SMS that number, and we'll try to answer those questions, all right? So three requirements for people to be in a Christ-glorifying relationship. The first requirement is that each person should have marriage as the goal of dating. Each person should have marriage as the goal of dating. They need to have a high view. Each person needs to have a high view of what marriage is. And this is a biblical view and understanding of marriage. What the Bible says is that marriage is a unique and special intimacy between two people. Mark chapter 10, verses 7 through 9 says this. Therefore, a man shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. So they are no longer two, but one flesh. Whatever God has joined together, let not man separate. In this passage, Jesus is repeating the idea from Genesis chapter 2, of what marriage was originally intended to be, and he affirms that now in the New Testament, and he goes on to say even more so. This is what marriage is all about. Marriage is intimacy that is complete. It is complete physical, emotional, spiritual unity with another person. It is a relationship with somebody that is different. It is an exclusive relationship. It is a relationship that is deep. It runs deeper than any other human relationship that another person will have. It reflects the relationship. Now listen carefully. I'm going to get a little theological on you, okay? This reflects the relationship within the three persons of the Trinity. How God the Father, God the Son, God the Spirit are in perfect community together. And when a husband and wife are married together, what that relationship and the depth of that relationship and the uniqueness of that relationship should imitate is the relationship between the three persons within the Godhead itself, himself. It is also a lifelong commitment to one other person. It is a lifelong commitment to one other person. God has ordained the institution of marriage, and he is the one who brings two people together. We have to believe this. How many people here have heard this notion of the one, right? There's that one person that you got to find. And if you do not find them at the karaoke bar that night, and you went to the bathroom or something, and they sang that song, and you had to, it was extra long, and so you just missed that person, and then you missed the one. I think that is a totally false understanding and idea of any kind of relationship. Because we have to understand this, that it is God who brings two people together. It is a God-centered, God-ordained, God-created relationship. And that's why when we think about the one, you know what the big faulty thing about the one, the theory of the one is? The big mistake or error of that is, what if one day you think to yourself, wow, I don't really like this person anymore. Maybe I missed the one. Or what happens a lot is that person meets somebody else that they get along better with, that understands them better. And then this person who holds on to this theory of the one starts to think, maybe my current wife or my current husband is not the one. And the one was this other person. You know, that's what happens on Facebook all the time, right? Facebook is often, a lot of times what happens are people get on Facebook and let me look up some people that I went to high school with. You look up, oh, I used to like this person. I wonder what this person's doing. They look them up. You dated or something. This happens more times than you would think. I personally know people who think about this, who this has gone, this has happened to them, where they strike up an old flame with somebody. And after they strike up after they make communication, they start thinking, oh man, maybe this person was the one. The one that I married was not the right person. And then they start going down a really dangerous path. We need this high view of marriage, an extremely high view of marriage. I gave this example, this example is an example of a rice cooker. I learned how to make rice from my parents. Who here learned how to make rice from your parents? Right. This was before like really high-tech rice cookers, and so you know my parents were Korean immigrants to the United States, and so we had rice a lot with our meals. And so what they taught us, what my mom taught me, was when you make rice, what you do is you stick your hand in. After you rinse it, you rinse the rice, and then you stick your hand in, and then the water level should be about up to here, and then that's enough water for your rice, and that will make good rice, right? And so, but there will be some days, what would happen? I stick my hand in there, and I think it's right, but then some days it's like perfect, then other days I don't put enough water in, and what happens? It's dry, and it's terrible rice. Sometimes I put way too much water in, and then what happens? It's like boo-boo, right? It's all wet and gross, and you can't eat it. And then what I realize is this, all right? And these new rice cookers, okay? These new rice cookers, in the actual rice pot, there are lines on that rice pot, right? And on those lines, there's not anything lower than three. There's like 3, 4, 5. And what I realize is this, is you just put the water at that level, depending on how many. If you put 3 cups of rice, you put enough water to hit the number 3, and it makes perfect rice all the time, right? That's what happens. That's the right way of doing things. No more mess-ups, right? No more screw-ups. And then I started flipping through this operating instructions, this operating manual of our rice cooker, and I started realizing, wow, I can make red rice if I want to. I can make bubur if I want to, and I can make it on purpose. In fact, I can make this food here where I never could do it before. Slow cook. How to use a rice cooker for baking cake. What, you're telling me I could bake cake with my rice cooker all this time that I've had a rice cooker, and yet I never knew that I could do that? And as I read this manual, I realized, wow, there was all this awesome stuff that my rice cooker could do. And all I thought it could do was just make rice. But it can wash my car. It can heal my wounds, right? It can do everything. I can bathe in it and get clean. I can't do any of that. But what I realize is there's so much untapped potential. And that's the same thing for our marriages. Now, I know many of us, we grew up in Christian backgrounds, and so we know marriage is a good thing. But many of us who do not have or lack a biblical understanding of marriage will always fall short of understanding the greatest potential in marriage and realizing that it is the deepest physical, emotional, spiritual intimacy that you can have with another person. That's a good thing. It's a good thing to strive for that. And I want to affirm that here, okay? Married, for some of us, I just have this feeling, some of us, we think, I don't even want to be married. All the experiences I've had with people being married, like my parents, my relatives, they can't stand each other. They've messed each other's lives up. They've messed my own life up. Maybe we're thinking, I don't want to be married. Or maybe some of us have this unrealistic idea of marriage that's more informed by media. And you think that marriage is just going to be this awesome thing. It's going to be blissful. It's going to be awesome. There's never going to be any problems. Things like sex is so easy. Having children is so easy. And you realize, oh my goodness, this is nothing as advertised. And we need to have a proper understanding of what it means to be married. Not only that, we need to understand it from God's manual so that we can experience all of the potential in marriage as well. Not only that, but as each person should have marriage as the goal of dating, what they really need is they need a realistic grasp of the responsibility entailed in marriage. It requires the ability to selflessly love and serve another. Are you ready? Even as a single adult, are you ready to die to yourself? Are you ready to put other people's needs ahead of yourselves? Are you able to resolve conflicts with other people in a constructive manner? Or do you always have to have your way? Does it always end up in an explosion? You have to understand that there are realistic expectations and responsibilities that are entailed in marriage that we have to have a sober judgment with. Even something like sex. You know, we had a iHeart seminar for students, and I tried to refrain from talking about sex too much, but you are older and more mature, and I will talk about sex a lot, okay? So, sex is an issue of serving. Do you know that? Sex is an issue of serving. For example, just in general, okay? Men want sex more than women, okay? Which means if you are a wife and you do not want to have sex, okay? Sometimes if you are willing to serve and be selfless, even though you're tired, even though you don't feel that great, you will still serve your husband to have sex. Have you guys ever thought of something like this? You're like, oh, this is disgusting. Well, follow along with me here, okay? Now for men, in a marriage relationship, you will serve and you will be selfless to your spouse when, even though usually the man is the one who initiates sex, let's say your wife is just tired. You have to be able to control yourself and say, okay, then I will serve her by not asking for it or not demanding it. Do you know even within a married relationship, rapes happen? Do you know even in a marriage relationship, sex is a topic that is often a very volatile subject? Because that husband and wife have not worked out how to selflessly love each other. That's why something like masturbation is a selfish act at the very root of it. Pornography is a selfish act because it is saying, I have a sexual desire, I will satisfy that in my own way, on my own timing, rather than I will selflessly serve by waiting. Does that make sense? Now everyone's awake, right? Amen? All right, we're all awake. Talked about sex a little bit. Okay. It requires being ready as well for marriage on a very practical level. Now, what I mean about this is that you should have some direction in your life. You should have some direction in life, and you should be moving towards it, okay? There is a big problem, especially in the United States, in that some adults never grow up. Some people call it Peter Pan syndrome. Some people call it other things. Basically, it is a man or a woman who... they don't like to work. Some people, they play video games. They're like 35 years old, and all they do is play video games and surf the internet and look at pornography, and that's all they do. They don't like to work. They don't like to interact with people. They don't take any responsibility. They have no direction in their lives. What is required is there has to be some direction in life. That doesn't mean we have to have all the answers, okay? Because oftentimes in our journeys with Jesus, Jesus might take us somewhere that we never expected. You know, 30 years down the line, 40 years down the line. That's what I always tell people. I know that God has called me here for the time being. And I have this feeling, God willing, that I'll be here, my family, we will be here for a long time. But that doesn't always necessarily mean that I'll be doing exactly what I'm doing. That I have my calling all figured out right now. In fact, I don't know what I'm going to be doing 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. I might be doing something totally different. Hopefully in God's will, not because I screwed up, But God's plans for us get revealed over time. And so we don't have to know everything. We don't have to have everything figured out. But we do have to know what God wants us to do in general. And we have to be moving towards it. Another important question at a very practical level is, are you compatible with that other person in your values and your convictions? Certain values maybe regarding your family, regarding church involvement, regarding work, regarding should a wife work, should a wife stay home with the kids? What are your values? What are your convictions about specific things? My conviction when I was a young man, and I'm still a young man, but when I was a younger man, was that God was calling me to the mission field. God was calling me to live overseas. And that was my conviction. I wanted to be faithful to it. So my deal breaker, do you know what a deal breaker is? Deal breaker is like that thing that you will not compromise. That's the one thing that if that person doesn't have, then it's over, right? And so my one big deal breaker was that this person had to be open to living overseas. And so with Nikki, that was something that I had to wrestle with and I had to figure out. And I had to figure out from her, I had to ask people that she knew really well, is she open to living overseas? And that was a conviction that I had because I knew that that's what God wanted me to do sometime in my life. Are you in a position, another question to ask you at a practical level is, are you in a position to be a self-sustaining family? And that means if you're a man, you have a job that you're able to support your family on your own, that you're able to take care of your family. I know culturally here, some of us might still live with our extended family, with our parents, or those kinds of things. But are you able to sustain your family if you get married? One of the hardest things for me was when I was interested in Nikki, and was the fact that I was also working through my vocational calling, my calling as far as my career. And I was leaving engineering, and I really felt God was leading me towards pastoral ministry as my vocation, as my career. And one of the things that I was thinking about was seminary, was advanced education, theological education. And so I had these two conflicts here. Was I have to go to seminary, which would be 3 to 4 years, but I also want to begin dating and hopefully marry Nikki. But there's no way if I started school that I would be able to support my family. I couldn't afford anything. And so I actually had to wait in approaching Nikki because I had to sort through what seminary would look like. I had to sort through those things and I had to wait. And that's something that I had to do at that time because I just wasn't ready. If I believe that a marriage is the goal of dating, and in the 3 to 4 year horizon, I'm going to be in school, I'm going to be a student, I'm going to have no income, then how could I even think about starting a family? So those are some things that you have to be thinking about as well. Now here are some questions. Here's two questions about dating and marriage that I'll answer for us. The first question: why do you think that marriage should be the goal of dating? I mean, come on. Can't dating just be for fun, right? And I think dating should be for fun. Dating is really fun when you're married, okay? You should not stop dating after you get married, okay? In fact, those are the best dates. Some of my best dates were when I was married. That doesn't make any sense. Okay. The reason why I think that marriage should be the goal of dating is I think, number one, the Bible is pro-marriage. The Bible is pro-marriage. The Bible says that people ought to be married. And that's why I want people in our church to get married. I really do. You know, this is kind of funny, but in the church that I was in before, the reputation of our church was, don't go to that church, because you'll never date anybody. You'll never get married. And I was like, come on. That's not the truth at all. We believe in the Bible that people ought to get married. The Bible is pro-marriage. But actually, what we're trying to respond to is how society and culture's understanding and paradigm of dating is extremely faulty. In fact, what I tell people is that society, cultural society's and culture's idea of dating is not something that will lead to healthy marriage, but it is something that is practiced for divorce. By meeting up with somebody and basically being false, that first meeting, and looking a way that you normally don't look, talking about stuff that you normally never talk about, doing stuff that you normally would not do, is that where you're really going to build a real relationship with somebody? Even things like sex, sex outside the bounds of marriage, even sex in a casual dating relationship, what research says is that, and I wish I had the actual numbers and the actual sources, but basically, people who have sex, they're not happier outside of marriage. They're not. Where people can enjoy sex is within the context of marriage. Isn't that profound? That the enjoyment of sex is not the quantity of sex, the quantity of people that you have sex with, but the depth of quality that you have with one person. That is totally different than society. And it is totally true. Dating can be very dangerous. Another reason why I think that marriage should be the goal of dating, especially for single adults, is because dating is dangerous without a clear goal, without that clear goal of marriage. I mean, come on. I don't want any of you guys to mess around with other people. I don't want any of you guys to waste time with something that will not lead to anything but heartaches and headaches. It will not lead to lasting marriages and biblical marriages. We have to reform our idea of dating, all right? So a follow-up question to this is, how can I meet my potential spouse if I don't ever date, okay? So now you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is the wrong church. How can I leave here? When you enter, for university, did you ever go to the wrong class? And you realize you're sitting in the wrong class. How do I leave this place smoothly so that nobody notices that I'm not in this class? There's no smooth way, okay? You're here. You're stuck here. Now let me finish what I have to say. How can I meet my potential spouse if I don't date? First of all, I do believe in dating. I do believe in dating as long as that end goal of marriage is very clear. As a single adult, I would encourage you, if you begin a dating relationship with someone, make it very clear. I'm not here to mess around. And I don't want you to also like freak that other person out. Either you're in or you're out. You're marrying me or not. And you have to figure that stuff out before. There are steps, okay? I mean, that's why you get engaged, okay? That's why you get to know each other. I mean, so dating is okay. And you don't have to this is the person, I'm going to marry you. Our first date, let's figure it out. Let's put the numbers together, all right? That's not what I'm saying, okay? But the end goal should be clear, okay? I also think that we can date or we can get to know potential spouses through real context. What I mean by real context is not, when you date, it's kind of, especially with somebody that's a total stranger, it's kind of a fake context. It's a contrived context where, usually women don't like to eat in front of the first date. They'll just eat a little bit, or they'll choose some the food that they don't like. Or guys, they'll be like, they act really polite when they're like burping and farting every other time, like in a meal. I mean, what we need is we need real context. We need context such as church community, where you see them and who they really are. If they're an immature dork at church and in life group, then that's how they're going to be if you marry them, okay? If they are a gentleman, if they are chivalrous, if they are loyal, if they're consistent in church, then you know that that's what they're going to be like when you marry them, when you marry that person. You can also get to meet your potential spouse by things like mentors, friends, family members, or even, hold on to your seats, dating services. Okay? That you trust. Okay? So what I mean by, that disclaimer is very important, okay? Don't be like, okay, I'm on my phone now. I gotta find what's the most popular dating site in Indonesia, right? It's not like that, okay? is you have to find people that you can trust. They know you. They know your values. They know your convictions. And you trust them. So in that sense, you eliminate a lot of family members. Now, this family member, all they care about is if I marry somebody who's rich, right? This person, all they care about if I marry somebody who's a doctor. So eliminate those kinds of options, okay? But if there is somebody that you trust, and they bring up a name, they're like, what do you think about this one person? Like, no way, that person is whatever it might be, right? But if you trust that person, I think you should be open to it. And that's how you can get to know them a lot better. Even dating internet dating sites. I mean, there's a lot more risk to those kinds of things, and we have to be very careful. But I think that's an okay way to see a pool of people that can possibly be. And actually, in at least that context, you can make your goal very clear and just say, hey, I'm not here to mess around, okay? I'm not here to just have casual dating or whatever it might be. I'm here because, you know, and I want to have a serious relationship. And I think that can be okay without, like, freaking that person out, all right? So I do believe in marriage, and I do believe that you can meet your spouse in many different ways, okay? The second requirement for somebody who enters into a dating relationship is each person should be developing Christ-like character. Each person should be developing Christ-like character. They need to be demonstrating progress in maturing as a follower of Christ. They have to have begun addressing personal issues and heart issues. Jeremiah 2, verse 13 says this, "For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters, and hewed out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water." Let me just explain this Bible verse very quickly. The Lord is making an accusation and a judgment against Israel. And what he is judging Israel for was for two things. That they've forsaken God, so they've forsaken that covenant relationship with God, and they've replaced that covenant relationship with God with false, counterfeit objects of worship and ways to be satisfied, ways to be fulfilled in their lives. And one of those ways in our society today that people try to fill that emptiness or fill their hearts or to meet their needs or address their issues is through something like relationships. And that's why people are in love with love. People will pour over chick flicks and dating movies or whatever it might be, and they'll watch them endlessly, these long 100-part miniseries. That's not a miniseries, okay? 100-part dramas about love that go in circles forever and end in tragedy all the time. And I believe that one thing that that marriage researchers have identified is several reasons why, wrong reasons why people get married. And so I'm just going to list these just so that you can identify, is this me? Is this something that the reason why I'm thinking about marriage or that I want marriage so badly? For many of us, it's escape. It is to escape or flee an unhappy home, unideal situation. Oftentimes, it might be to get revenge on your parents because this is the exact person that they hate and they do not want you to marry. And you're like, it's the person I found. It could be because of a negative self-image because we don't like who we are, and so what you will do is you will marry somebody else for significance. That is the idea, an idiom of a trophy wife. A man feels insecure about himself, so he gets the best-looking wife ever, and he says, what about wearing this clothes that makes you, bam, bam, it's like, and then people will say, wow, this guy, how did this guy get this wife, right? Or a husband that the wife thinks can fulfill needs or offer security for because they make a lot of money, because they're a certain way. Another wrong reason is a Messiah complex. Sadly, I see this a lot. A Messiah complex simply is when you think that you are the one that can save that person. You are their counselor. You are their therapist. You are the one that can. No one else can change this problem, this addiction, this alcohol problem, this drug problem, whatever it might be. But me, I can do it if I just love them enough. Some of us are afraid. We're motivated by fear that we will be left alone. No one. And we'll be 30 or 40 and we'll be all alone. Some of us might enter into a relationship on the rebound. What that means is you're previously hurt in a relationship. Maybe it was a long-term relationship that ended very ugly. And so you quickly rush into another relationship. And you quickly get married. I've seen this a lot, actually, in my interactions with people. And they get their heart broken. So right away, they find somebody else. And they get married really quickly. Another reason, last one, is out of guilt. Because you have had sex already, you feel like you need to get married. Because you are pregnant, and so you need to get married. Or because you feel guilty for wanting to break up with that person, and you just don't want to hurt that person's feelings. And sadly enough, I see all of these as reasons. We have to begin to address these personal heart issues, because no matter what, no matter if they look a certain way or whatever it might be, if these personal issues are not dealt with, they will be carried over into your marriage relationship, no matter what. And at some point, that thing will raise its ugly head in your relationship, and it will be a huge problem. That's why there has to be some track record of beginning to deal with that issue, being honest and being humble with that issue. I think another thing is that people have to be time-tested in their faith and in their faithfulness. They have to be time-tested. People have to know, and they've had to gone through this iteration of knowing that they're sinners, knowing that they're forgiven, knowing that they're loved by God, struggling with those things, and then experiencing the grace of God. They need to have developed faithfulness, learning how to obey, learning how to trust, going through trials and tests of their faith, sometimes failing, yet sometimes passing. And as they go through those tests of time, of faith and faithfulness, their faith will only go stronger. You see them for who they really are. I tell people this all the time, and people hate this answer. They say, "What do you think about this person?" Well, why don't you just wait on it? Why don't you give it some time? Because number one, it will test whether you really like that person. And number two, you'll really test whether this person really is this way or it is a season and a phase of life that is temporary. I've met so many people in one season of their life, they are so excited and passionate for Jesus Christ. And yet at the next season of life, they are not at all. And that's like doing a switch on somebody, right? I thought you loved God. Next season of life, and that wasn't really who I was. We have to figure out who we are, deal with our personal issues, and be time-tested in faith and faithfulness. I think something that's very important in developing Christ-like character as well is that they are maximizing their current status right now. Let me explain what I mean by this. What it means is that they are taking the initiative to develop in other areas of life. Are you taking it upon yourself to grow in all areas of life, in your vocation, in your church, in your family, in your community, in your personal life? Or are you waiting? Are you waiting for that special person, that one person, and then after you meet that person, okay, that's when I'll start exercising. That's when I'll get my act together. That's when I'll be more responsible in my finances. That's when I'll find a job. That's when I will take ownership of this addiction or this sin or this problem in my life. Let me tell you this, okay? A person's track record, past track record, will usually indicate future success, okay? Future performance. So if somebody says, well, I'm just going to wait till I find that person before I start brushing my teeth every day, before I treat people well, before I stop watching cartoons, whatever it might be, then you know what? They're not going to change just because of that event. I guarantee you, they will not change. There has to be a demonstration and somebody taking initiative to develop. And what I mean by that is you develop, you take steps of personal growth, that you take that initiative to say, you know what? I really want to grow in my understanding of current events and the world. And so instead of reading comic books and, what is it, manga? Is that what it's called? Manga. Okay. Instead of reading that stuff, I'm going to read the news. Wow. Revolutionary. Because I'm going to care about something more than fantasy. I can't think of any suitable examples. They're all like inappropriate. It's taking responsibility right now, making the most of it. You know, for me, one of the things that I realized when I was single was, man, I just didn't know how to manage my money. And so my first job when I finished graduate school, I actually made more money than my mother ever made as a nurse for 30 plus years. And I didn't know what to do with this money. One of the things that I was so thankful for is that I made that, you know, the book I bought? I bought Personal Finance for Dummies, because I am a dummy in this. So I need to learn how to invest. I need to learn how to budget. I need to learn how to manage my money. I need to learn how to get out of debt. I need to learn how to use credit cards properly. All these things I needed to learn. And I'm so thankful that I learned those things in my 20s, so that now when we got married, this is what I tell people. I'm so thankful for my wife. And I'm so thankful that I had to learn these things, that my wife keeps me accountable with it, so that when we got married, we weren't in debt. We didn't go into debt together, but we saved. And so even now, even though we don't make much money, you know, one year of when I was a pastor, I remember I was making like, I did the math, and how much do I work? I work like maybe this amount of hours in a week, which is a lot. I make this amount of month per month. I make like $3 an hour. I make like nothing. I have a master's degree. What am I doing? But then I'm so thankful because we were able to save up our money, even though we didn't have a lot. And it was because I took those steps of developing when I was single, that now as a married person, I could do things responsibly. There has to be demonstration of progress in personal growth. That's why I think, in right now, as a single person, you should take advantage of it. Learn some hobbies. Learn some things that you wouldn't be able to do otherwise. A special skill, knitting or sewing or sports or managing money or learning how to use a computer, like all these kinds of things. These are very practical things that will develop you as a person. Reading books. These are great ways to develop as a person, and that you can maximize your stage of life right now as a single person. In doing this as well, you learn how to serve others by serving in the church. I think that serving in the church is the best way to learn how to serve. Training for serving others selflessly happens in the context of church life. Before you ever get into an exclusive community with one other person, an exclusive community called your family, you ought to practice serving in the community that you are currently involved in. That's why I say, If you look at somebody in church and they are selfish, they don't care about other people, they never share, they never talk, they never discuss, then why do you think that they're going to do that in your family? They're going to do the exact same thing. You're going to be the one washing the dishes, cooking the food, clean, doing the laundry. You're going to be the one. Because they never took the initiative to wash the dishes in life group. They never took the initiative to talk to other people, to open up their homes. That's where you learn how to serve. Like I said, in my early 20s, you know where I learned? You know where I learned how to, when I come home from a long day of work, I learned and I came home, I would come home and I have to now play with my children, help with dinner, clean up the house. I do that right as soon as I get home. You know where I learned that? From when I was a single person and I worked and I did an hour commute, I drove home, I got back home, right away I had to make dinner for somebody that I invited this, you know, a stupid freshman over for dinner. They don't even know what, you know, how to make anything. So I make them a nice whatever meal. And then after that I have another meeting, and then, you know, I hang out with my roommates and we would talk. That's where I learned how to be selfless. It's because I had to go to a life group, even though I was dead tired after a long day. That same muscle exercising how to serve is the same thing that I use when I come home and I'm dead tired. And I sit at dinner and I engage with my wife. And I talk about her day. I talk about her feelings. I serve my family. I give my son a bath. I clean my kids' poopy diapers. I learned that in the context of church community. Here's some questions then about dating and character issues. What if there are no prospective relationships for me right now? What if there are no prospective people for me right now? Man, that's a tough question. I'll be very honest, that's a tough question, because sometimes when I look, I'm like, man, you're right. Oh, man, it's depressing. First of all is this. I want to affirm your singleness. It is not a bad thing to be single. In fact, it is not a bad thing. I want to affirm people if you feel that God has called you to be celibate, which means never marrying, or in a season of your life not being married. I think oftentimes, especially in certain Christian circles or churches, you know, like marriage is like the ultimate, it's better than heaven, right? And so like if it was a choice between Jesus coming back and getting married, everyone's like, I want to get married first. Can you just wait? Just wait, all right? Wait till I get married. At least wait till my honeymoon or something, right? Don't come back till that. And that's what churches, they say, you know, if you're married, you're worth so much more than the single. Singles, just forget you. Just live life, try to love God, that's it, that's, you know. But marriage, that's when real life happens, right? Like when you're single, your life is on hold. I say that's a bunch of garbage. If we understand when we're single, there's so much more that we can do, then you should embrace being single and take advantage of it. Take advantage of the experiences when you're single. To travel, to do missions projects. Sign up for AMP on March 28th through April 2nd. And then maybe after that, you'll find that one, and it'll be awesome. So that's the first thing, is I want you to be affirmed in your singlehood. I want you to be affirmed in not being married, because that's not the most valuable thing in your life. Right? It is a good thing. It is a great thing. But it's not the best. It's not marriage is better than singlehood, all right? And then take advantage of your current status. Gain experiences. Grow. Serve. Sometimes I wish that, you know, my family was away. And pretty much October, November, they were away. And then January, they were away. And it was like, I was back in this mode again where, like, I have all this time to meet up with people that I don't have. Because at night, I spend every dinner with my family. That's my commitment. But now when my family was away in the United States, I'm like, you want to meet for dinner? You want to meet for breakfast? You want to meet for lunch? I'm free to meet with you anytime. I'll go to Jakarta and I'll meet with you because I'm available. And when we're single, that's something that we could take advantage of. Really, like I said, it is not a problem to be single. You can do so much in your singlehood. With this as well, be open-minded to people who might be qualified candidates. Like, you might not think they're qualified, but especially if there's a trusted mentor or friend or parent or family member that you're like, I don't know, that person, I never considered that person because maybe I grew up with that person or I saw this person when they were really dorky. And now they've matured and they blossomed into this great man of God. Sometimes we're blinded by those by people who we think are not qualified. And let me pose another question now. What characteristics do I look for in a potential spouse? I think we should be thinking about this. Not too much, but I really think we should be thinking about this. I think the first thing is they should pass the test of time. Pass the test of time in first, attractiveness. Okay? Like I said, like if you just like somebody, it might just be a passing thing. And so you see, well, do I like them a month from now when I get to know them a little bit more? Or do I not? Did I only just think that girl was cute and that's it, and now like I move on to the other person, the new person that I think is cute? Does it pass the test of time, your attraction to that person? Another test of time is progress. So what I mean by that is, are they progressing in their servanthood, in their growth, in becoming like Christ? That's how you see it. Like, are they really who they present themselves to be? And, you know, for me as a pastor, that's why I'm a great resource. Because I see people in their ugliest states, all right? I see people one of the greatest joys I have as a pastor is seeing people pass through seasons of life and pass those tests. And then I'll be like, hey, you thought this guy was a dork because he was a freshman, all right? You knew each other when you were both, like, 18 years old. And now this person, he was a dork. Yeah, he was immature. Yeah, he did treat women badly. Yeah, he did play video games like 20 hours out of 24 hours. Yeah, he did do all these things. But now he's changed tremendously. And I've seen it not just in one stage of life, but over the years. He is who he is. So be open to that. And then also, they demonstrate readiness for the responsibilities of marriage. So sharing convictions, sharing values, interests, those kinds of things that they're ready for. They're ready because they work a regular job. You know, just because they don't make a lot of money, at least they're working. At least they work hard. Like those kinds of things that they demonstrate responsibility. All right? All right. Hopefully you're generating. Don't forget the SMS. That number is there, right? Yeah, SMS, all right? So. A last requirement, each person should be involved in biblical community. Each person should be involved in biblical community. They need to have practiced God-centered relationships. They need to have practiced God-centered relationships. They need to have sound mentors in their lives who can provide guidance. Titus chapter 2, one of my favorite verses, parts of the Bible. Titus chapter 2, verses 2 through 6. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled, sound in faith, love, and steadfastness. Older women likewise are to be reverent in behavior, not slanderers or slaves to much wine. They are to teach what is good, and so train women to love their husbands and children, to be self-controlled, pure, working at home, kind and submissive to their own husbands, that the word of God might not be reviled. Likewise, urge the younger men to be self-controlled. So we see that Paul is promoting a strong mentoring culture in the church. Older men who are teaching younger men and modeling for younger men what it means to be sober-minded, dignified. I love that word, dignified. How to really be a man, how to carry yourself. Self-controlled, sound in faith, and in love and steadfastness. These older men are supposed to, this is what it means to love a woman. This is what it means to love other people. This is what it means to love Christ. Be steadfast with it. In the same way, this mentoring culture for women, where older women are to teach and model and share what it means to be reverent, to be non-slanderers with our words, to teach, to raise children. I think this is so important in a church. It's something that I want to create in our church. That's why I said one of the things that we got to start right away is our men's ministry, our men's discipleship. is because in our men's discipleship, we will begin creating this kind of manhood culture. When someone comes in, another man comes into the church, and they're a man, or they're a boy in a man's body. They come in and they see the other men in the church serving, being responsible, honoring women, carrying themselves with dignity. They'll be like, wow, I need to become like these men in our church, in this church. I want to strive. Women, when they come to the church, they'll be like, these men are different. They don't treat me as a sexual object. They don't treat me as somebody to be won over. I can trust them. They treat me well. They treat me like a sister. And they're like, wow, there are a lot of godly candidates in this church. That is what I would love to see. Having a mentor who provides guidance can also be that facilitator who can give you honest feedback. They'll give you honest, you know what? You're really undeveloped in this area. You really got to develop and grow in your vision or in your values, in your consistency, in your character. It's somebody who does this can give you perspective on the person that you might be interested in as well. They might know the bigger picture. You know, sometimes this is what's tricky about in the church, right? Because this somebody who has a bigger picture knows what's going on with both parties. They know what's going on in that other person's life. Oftentimes, a big mistake that a guy will make is they're like, "I'm ready, Pastor. I'm ready to." I'm ready practically, I'm ready physically, I'm ready, right? And then I ask them, so what about the other person? Like, do you know where they are right now? And oftentimes they're like, no. I'm like, well, you should care about that. Because what if God is working in them right now? What if they're working out issues right now? Where if you enter the picture, you're gonna mess them up. You think you're ready, but you have to think about the other person as well. Facilitators can help bring that kind of perspective around. Not only mentoring relationships, but they also have good friendships and good accountability partners. I think one of the greatest indicators of somebody who will be your best friend as your spouse is somebody who knows how to be a good friend to other men, fellow men or fellow women. Because that's where you can speak into each other's lives. That's when you can trust each other. It is ideal if a couple is transparent and the community is involved. I think that's why what's so helpful is, you know, I always kind of cringe when I hear, oh, you know, something like there's a relationship that nobody knows about in the church, but it's kind of hidden, they try to keep it underground or whatever terminology they use. It's because then what? You're missing out on what? Not involving friends, not seeking after accountability. That is so important in a relationship. Not only that, but you miss out on celebrating together when it works out, if it works out. That's why public weddings are so important. Is because in a public wedding, not only are they eyewitnesses, but they're also celebrating together. You know, when my wife and I, when we finally got married, it was a long process. You know how my window, I told Nikki when I approached her to date and to get married, I said, I want to get married in a year, within a year and a half. You know how long it took for us to get married? It took us almost 3 years, because it took almost or over 2 years just for her parents to approve of me. And so we were praying. We had our mentors praying for us. We had friends praying for us, rooting for us. You know, people working behind the scenes to like talk to our parents, and like it was awesome, right? So when we got married, it wasn't like, oh, who are these two people, right? It is, wow, we know their story. This is awesome. God has brought them together. And because of that, we're celebrating. And they drove such a long way to get there. And we celebrated together because we involve the community with us. I think also something that's important when people are involved in biblical community, what it does is it shows that they honor others as brothers and sisters in God's family. There are boundaries. Do you know that? There are boundaries that we have within this spiritual family. We need to treat people like they're our physical siblings. This is biblical for us. This is the biblical commandment that we treat people with absolute purity. We want the best for them. We watch out for each other. We love each other. Not a romantic love, but with a Christ-like love for each other. That's what should typify our relationships here. I don't want us to go to the opposite extreme, where it's always like men on one side, women on the other side. You never talk, you never interact, you never relate. You should be building friendships, okay? But there should be boundaries with those friendships, appropriate boundaries. That's why I say, as single adults, you cannot be best friends with somebody of the opposite gender until you get married. It's just not appropriate. It might be appropriate when you're 3 years old and you take a bath with that girl, you're naked together in the bath, but when you're 28 years old, you should not be taking a bath and naked with somebody unless that person is your spouse, right? And even in a regular relationship, whenever somebody says, my best friend, you know, I'm a guy, my best friend is not my wife but another woman, that's like doesn't make sense. But there has to be those boundaries. They need to, in their dating relationship, they need to uphold the values of the entire community. So what I mean by that is, in their dating relationship, they still honor the commitments and the values of the community. That they're not just into themselves. They're looking out to others. They're reaching out to others. They're ministering and serving. They're not making people feel like they're left out or the third wheel. They still are involved in life group. They'll come to life group. They won't plan their dates on life group nights and those kinds of things. But they're involved and they're committed to it. Actually, let me share two of my pet peeves, okay? One pet peeve I have is couples who act like they're married when they're not married yet. So they do everything together. They call each other like pet names, like whatever that, like bunny rabbit or, you know, whatever it might be. Like, whatever, flubber or whatever they're, you know, whatever you're, they start acting like they're married when they're not married yet. And then what they do is they, to the exclusion of other people, to the detriment of the community, they start acting like they're married when they are not. Another pet peeve that I have is worship PDA. Do you know what that is? PDA? Public displays of affection. With people, I think I'm like a little bit grossed out when it's people who are married, but what bothers me, but I'm used to it. I'm okay with that, okay? So if people are married in our church and they're like, you know, holding hands with their spouse or they're that's okay, okay? The worst is like when they're not even married, they're dating, and they're like, oh, like they're worshiping God. Oh, yes. I'm like, come on, guys. Let's be real, all right? You're not worshiping God at that moment, all right? You're worshiping something else, all right? And I think what that really does is it really destroys that biblical community where Christ is in the focus. And so in a godly dating relationship that is leading towards marriage, they're still able to honor the values of the entire community. You know what happens when that kind of stuff happens? I mean, I make fun of it or whatever. But you know what really happens? The other people around, they're like, oh, I feel a little bit awkward, right? I feel a little bit left out. That's what happens. You begin excluding people and community doesn't get built up. It gets broken. Does that make sense? So leave that stuff to like dates and other things that you do. When you get married, you can do that kind of stuff, all right? Here are two final questions regarding dating and involvement in biblical community. What do I do if I'm interested in someone? What do I do if someone's interested in me? So I'm two sides to the coin. What do I do if I'm interested in someone? What do I do if someone's interested in me? I would say this. Seek out accountability and guidance. Because I think there's a very fine line between trying to get to know them and leading them on and giving false expectations. And, you know, that's a very fine line. I don't want to present like, our dating was textbook perfect. In fact, for us, Nick is like, I wanted to punch you in the face. I hated you. It was, you know, we would talk on the phone after we started liking each other. we started talking on the phone for a very long time. And I knew it wasn't healthy, but like we're interested in each other. This is exciting. So we like, she would call, we would either I would call her or she would call me, and it would be about ministry. So do I have to bring these things to this event? Yeah, I do. Then, so how's your family, right? And then the conversation would end being like, instead of what could have been like a 2-minute conversation, ended up being a 1-hour conversation. And then afterwards, I'd be like, oh, that was pretty cool, right? But then what happened was I would do that consistently. And so I'm giving, what am I doing? I'm giving these vibes. Yeah, I really like you. I'm interested in you. I like to talk to you. But like, where's the expectation of, is there anything that's going to happen with this? And so I think there's a very fine line. So where we need that accountability, we need that guidance, because you don't want to lead a person on and dishonor that person. For men, I would say this: if you're interested in someone, you should take initiative. All right. I think men sometimes we are just wimps, and we're like, we love having girls like us, but we're like, we don't want to make a commitment, or we don't want to say, oh, I like you, or I'm interested in you. And we'll just lead women on. I think that's very important for men to take initiative. I think the first way to take initiative is talk to a mentor, talk to a friend about it, and get accountability. And then after you pray about it, after you really seek out if this is God's will, after you assess yourself, am I ready for this? Am I ready for the responsibility? There's some point where you have to take the risk and do it, okay? You have to be a man and take a risk. If she rejects you, she rejects you. You move on. If she doesn't reject you, praise God. Now you move forward in your relationship with her, right? For women, what I would say is be patient. If you're interested in somebody, be patient. Or be open, okay? Let's say you find out someone is interested, and you're like, oh my God, no way. Stay away from me. I'd say if that person is a viable candidate, then be open to it. And then after that, be decisive and straightforward. If you have no interest in that person, make it very clear. I have no interest in you. Don't try to be nice. Be very honest with them. I'm not interested in you. Just leave it and then end it. Okay? Then the person can move on, you can move on, and be decisive about it. All right? The last question is, what do I do if my parents, mentors, and or friends disapprove of this relationship that I'm in? I would say, in wisdom, at least listen and consider their input. At least listen and consider their input. You have to discern, right? So you have to discern and say, is it true? Do I really need to put it on hold? Is it true about my character? Is it true about some things that I need to work on, or my readiness to be in a relationship? Is it true that I'm dishonoring her or dishonoring him? In wisdom, at least listen and consider their input. That's what I would say first. Secondly, I'd say prayerfully submit it to the Lord's will. Does it violate Scripture? I say if the person is not a Christian, definitely violate Scripture, because the Bible says, do not be unequally yoked with non-believers. And then I would ask, does it violate your conscience? It might not be explicitly stated in Scripture, but you know something's not right about this relationship. Is it an idol in my life? Is he or she somebody that I cannot live without? And I'd say this, listen to both. When somebody brings something up, listen very carefully, okay? Listen both to what they say and who says it, okay? Sometimes we're like, you don't speak to me, you don't even know me, what all this stuff, right? And just because you think they don't know you, you don't listen to their advice, or you think they have bad intentions, you don't listen to their advice. Sometimes you got to just listen to the facts, okay? They might not care a lick about you at all, but if what they say is true, you got to listen. At the same time, you have to think about who says it. Because sometimes that person might not have any credibility whatsoever. Sometimes it might be a person who has ulterior motives. You have to think, who is saying this, and do they have the credibility to back it up in their lives? And then do they have that weight? You know, this is so funny, because oftentimes what we'll do is we'll if we're interested in somebody and they come to me and I tell them, well, I don't know if it's going to work. I don't know if you're ready. I don't know if that person's ready. You know what they do if they don't want to hear it from me? They go to somebody else. So what do you think about this? Until they go to the guy who says, go for it, man. I think it should work. They go to the person who will tell them what they want to hear. That happens all the time. So it's both listen to what they say, but also listen to who says it. You have to consider both those things, all right? Let me, before we conclude, and, you know, I know that it's a little bit late and it's Saturday night and it's been, you know, some of us were like, we've been out all day, we've been busy, and tomorrow's Sunday, and we want to, Sunday celebration, 10:30 at or 10 o'clock at Heartline Center, and you have to be there early, and whatever it might be, but I do want to open it up to some questions, and then I want to close out tonight with just some time to pray together. And there's some things that God convicted me about throughout this week that I wanted to bring up with you. But I do want to open it up to some questions before we enter into a time of prayer and worship. So other questions? So this is such a thorough seminar that no questions needed to be answered, right, or asked. Can you ask some questions? You can SMS questions to this number. Or feel free, you don't have to ask them, you can ask them if you want, okay? We won't think anything of it, okay? Is there any questions? This is always the longest seminar I ever do, so. Questions? Comments? Concerns? This is not going to work, Pastor. We'll put our heads down. You can leave the room right now. Can I just ask everybody to stand, please?